At the dark end of the street, that's where we always meet, hiding in shadows where we don't belong, living in darkness to hide our wrong. At the dark end of the street, you and me. I know time's gonna take its toll. We have to pay for the love we stole. It's a sin and we know. Coming on strong, still away to the dark end of the street. They're gonna find us. They're gonna find us. They're gonna find us, Lord, someday. At the dark end of the street, you and me. And when the daylight hours roll around, and by chance we'll go downtown, if we should meet just walking on by,
bit more of Zapp and the Mothers racing us to the finish right now. Little House I Used to Live In behind us. We just heard James Carr singing At the Dark End of the Street, and then we heard some more of Little House I Used to Live In from the 1970 Mothers record Burnt Weenie Sandwich. Ergo Fizmiz was in there for a little bit from his Choice Sweeties from the Fudge Factory. Nuts on Boxing. We heard the Bonzo Dog Band doing What Do You Do from Keenzum. 1969. Sachiko Kanenobu released that came out last year called Fork in the Road. The track was called I Need You. Shop Assistants did All of the Time from 1986 self-titled record, and MX80 at the top of the set from 1981's Out of Control. It was Gary and Priscilla. Hey, that's everything we heard. My name's Scott. Do stay tuned, friends. Mark Hurst is going to be right up with Tectonic. Here on Freeform Radio, WFMU in East Orange, WMFU in Mount Hope, in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM, worldwide online at WFMU.org. I do look forward to seeing you next week. Hope you have a good week, everybody. Take care of yourself. Okay.
Thank you. If you sit down and be quiet, we'll make an attempt to perform Brown Shoes Don't Make It.
Back on your seat, come on. Come on, back to your seat.
Everybody in this room is wearing a uniform, and don't kid yourself. You'll hurt your throat. Stop it.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst. I'll be your host for the next hour or so. It's a pleasure to be here with you. Thanks for taking some time to listen in. The title of the show today is Emergency Surveillance Update, and I feel like that requires a little bit of an explanation, especially for people who maybe haven't been listening to the show for that long. What I like to do on this show generally is focus on an interview with one person. Usually they're an author or a journalist, an expert somehow in one of the topics that I like to cover on the show. Could be surveillance, could be AI. Last week we had Liz Pelley on, who wrote a fantastic new book on Spotify called Mood Machine. All those interviews, by the way, are in the archives. You can find them at tectonic.fm, T-E-C-H, tonic.fm. But once in a while, instead of running an interview with an individual guest, I will have an update of some sort where I'm speaking most of the hour, as I'm going to do tonight. I do have one clip to share along the way, but for the most part, it's me talking and giving my perspective on something that's happening. And every, I don't know, few months, several months, it depends on the year, I will have something I call the surveillance update or the surveillance roundup. And the reason I do these surveillance shows every once in a while is because as I'm going through the individual interviews, the news of big tech and its predatory behavior on the rest of us just builds up and builds up. And so if there's some shocking predatory thing that's happening, and let's say I'm spending the week talking about Spotify, that has built up in the background, and I need some way to catch you up on the ongoing story of big tech's unethical behavior towards everybody else who's not in big tech. And this is one of those moments. It's time for a surveillance update. However, recent events have been so, did I use the word egregious already? It's hard to put words on what's been happening in the U.S. recently, both at the hands of tech companies and the current presidential administration, the executive branch of our government, and in fact, the partnership between the two, shows that there are shared interests in these really horrible outcomes that are coming at us. And so that's why I called the episode this evening the Emergency Surveillance Update, because there are some updates that I need to share with you that are more time sensitive and I think more concerning than the surveillance updates that I usually give you. So if you go to the playlist, you can see an image that encapsulates everything. I'm not going to get to this right away, and we're going to be building up to the horror, the real horror in this show. But I'd like to start with this playlist image, and you can get to the playlist if you go to tectonic.fm, T-E-C-H, tonic.fm, and click the playlist link for the emergency surveillance update show. You'll see it right there. And there's an image front and center. This is a screenshot of a post from a social media service called Blue Sky, which is not Elon Musk's service. And it's not Mark Zuckerberg's service. It's a, for the moment, a relatively benign service. I use Blue Sky as well as Mastodon. Anyway, there's this post by an account called Betty Bowers, who's a character of a, believe, a Canadian comedian. And this is what this post said, which I thought encapsulated our moment quite well here in the U.S. Quote, "I learned this week that you can put our troops' lives in danger, compromise our national security, and violate the Espionage Act, and the government will do nothing. But if you write an editorial for your school newspaper that," and I'm not going to say his name, I'm just going to say the current occupant, "doesn't like, you will be abducted on the street and disappeared." And those two parts of that post, I think, are a good encapsulation of what's been happening. On the one hand, you have top leaders in the current administration, in the cabinet level leaders, who somehow had a chat on Signal, which is a messaging app, full of emojis and flippant little remarks as they discussed the upcoming plans for a bombing overseas. And somehow, someone on that chat had managed to add to the chat a journalist from The Atlantic, who then proceeded to publish the contents of the chat. So there's, I'm not going to get too, just so you know, I'm not going to get too far into this bit, but I want to say there's, we should acknowledge that there are two buckets of wrong here. One is cabinet level officials not having the proficiency or not even following the proper protocol to use the proper encrypted military grade apps, not Signal, although Signal has good encryption, but there are many other safeguards in other apps that the military use, as I understand, that prevent this sort of thing from happening. For example, they make it hard to invite an Atlantic journalist onto your war planning chat if you use one of the proper apps. They didn't use that. So there's all sorts of protocol failures here and just questions of competence, I'll put it like that. Questions of basic competence with these leaders in this administration. The other bucket that a lot of people have pointed out is that, you know, they were planning a bombing and the missiles did hit a building and people died. And how much have we heard about the plans there? Were they the right people? Do we know why we're sending bombs over there? Is this the right thing for us to be doing? That's a little bit out of scope for my discussion tonight, but I just wanted to acknowledge that the failure of messaging protocol is not the only question here. But what Betty Bowers points out in the second half of her post, I think brings it home, which is that these cabinet-level officials are making all sorts of huge mistakes that, if I understand right, in lower levels of the government would get people immediately fired, if not drawn up on charges. And yet nothing happens to these officials. On the other hand, we have the issue of a Tufts PhD student who was disappeared. And before that, someone at Columbia, not far from where I live, also disappeared. And I'm going to get into the disappearances soon, but in the case of the Tufts PhD student, just to finish off Betty Bowers' idea here, the offense amounted to an op-ed in a school newspaper. And I can read you more about that later. So here are the stakes, okay? If I can just set up the context for today's show, this emergency surveillance update, is that we're in a moment now where we have an administration that daily is bringing up questions of basic competence, and I'm trying to be as as generous as I can, and not bring up worse implications or possibilities as some people have floated. Let's just say it's a basic issue of competence, and yet nothing. There are no consequences for these actions, as opposed to the more vulnerable among us, students on student visas, who are now being disappeared, as though this was, you know, some very different country from the one that I have known my entire life. So that's why we need to talk about this. But I'm going to get back to the Tufts grad student. I want to start just with surveillance to let you know that these are not isolated incidents. In other words, here's what I'm trying to say. This issue with this current administration, it's not like it just started last week. Oh my goodness, they're using surveillance and or poorly using digital tools and taking these poorly thought out actions, resulting in unjust outcomes. No, this is not a new issue. I have been covering surveillance for years, and one of the easiest ways to enter this conversation is to talk about the surveillance devices that people put inside their homes. And here I'm talking about the Amazon surveillance devices called the Amazon Echo or the Echo Dot, these Alexa-enabled devices. Google has its own surveillance devices. Apple has its own surveillance devices. Facebook has its own surveillance devices. And there are others. I know Snap has different things. But it's really Apple, Amazon, Facebook, and Google are the four main companies, as they are in so much other unethical behavior, who are trying to normalize the idea that we're going to live our lives in houses full, bristling with microphones that are picking up any and all audio in every room where you have the surveillance device. Do I need to make this any more explicit? If you have an Alexa device or a Zuck surveillance device or any other big tech surveillance device in your bedroom, it is liable to pick up any and all audio that comes from that bedroom at any and all times. Now, I've been saying this for years, okay? And when I tell people outside of the show about this, they look at me or they make a little comment, oh, Mark, you're a little bit of a conspiracist, aren't you? Or where's your tinfoil hat? I've heard all the comments. And I would say along the way, you know, this is as of, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, you know, they found, journalists found that there were contractors in, I don't know, Macedonia somewhere that were getting recordings of the surveillance devices of people in their kitchen, in their living room, in their bedrooms. And yes, these contractors who do not work for big tech companies were listening to and delighting in the comedy that they heard from random Americans' middle-class lives coming through the footage from their surveillance devices. And when I told people this, and I covered this on the show years ago, and people would say, well, that was a glitch. That's always the excuse. It was just a glitch. And the big tech company said the same thing. It was a glitch. It was a one-off. It's not going to happen again. They patched the problem. They fixed the bug. Okay, so stop going on about that. And I kept saying, no, it's not a glitch. It's by design. These companies are basing their business models on surveillance, and they are looking for more ways to normalize surveillance in ordinary people's lives. And so it's not a glitch. This is where things are headed. No, Mark, no. Where's your tinfoil and so on? Well, then in Ars Technica on March 14, recently, there was a headline. Everything you say to your Echo will be sent to Amazon starting on March 28. March 28 is in the past. That means that if you have an Amazon surveillance device that runs Alexa, it is listening to you, and it is sending that audio to the cloud. Here is a quote from the Ars Technica story. Starting on March 28, recordings of every command spoken to the Alexa, living in Echo speakers and smart, that is to say surveillance, displays, will automatically be sent to Amazon and processed in the cloud. And I think if I brought this up to people, to skeptics, or that is to say to boosters, big tech boosters today, they would say, well, Mark, didn't you hear what it said? Recordings of every command. They're only recording the commands. To which I would say, oh, you're so naive. At first it was, oh, they don't send anything. And now we're saying, oh, well, they only send the commands. Don't you see the trajectory we're on? These companies have surveillance devices that have live microphones and live connections to the cloud, and they are telling you, we are listening. As of March 28, we are listening. So we're not even going to pretend that, oh, it's local on the device. Oh, we never, even though it, we know it wasn't local on the device based on what the journalists found years ago, but they used to have some paper-thin excuse that, oh, that was just a glitch. Now they're saying, no, we are sending audio to the cloud. So if you have a surveillance device that runs Alexa or whatever the other sickly, sweet, cutesy little names that they give their AIs, their surveillance bot personas. If you have a surveillance device from any big tech company anywhere in your home, you need to get it out of your home immediately, because these companies are going to be recording everything and processing that data, storing it and processing it, and adding it to your dossiers. And by the way, why do they want all of that? It's not because they're naturally creepy. I mean, these guys are creepy, but they didn't start to be creeps. The reason why they ultimately want these recordings is so that they can train their AIs. All of this audio data is fed into the hopper, into a giant AI training algorithm. That's why Teslas have something like 7 cameras on every Tesla car, recording everything and everyone within sight and audio distance of every Tesla. You know that, right? When you walk by a Tesla, you're being recorded, and your footage, your face, your gait, everything you say can and may be sent to Tesla headquarters. Same thing. It's for getting more data for free in order to train their AIs, because these companies are banking everything on the growth of AI. That's the new bubble we're in. And so Apple, Amazon, Facebook, Google are using their surveillance devices to train their AIs, and they give the excuse, well, we need to send the commands to the cloud so we can listen to you better. Yeah. So lesson number one, get the surveillance devices out of your home. Now, I will acknowledge that the devices popularly known as smartphones are also surveillance devices. They have slightly, ever so slightly, better protections than an Alexa device, but they're on the same trajectory. And so at some point, we're going to need to probably take the surveillance phones out of audio distance as well. I would highly recommend that you not have a surveillance phone in your bedroom pretty much ever, but certainly not when you go to sleep. For one thing, you don't want that to be the last thing you see before you go to sleep and the first thing you see when you get up in the morning. But in time, we will find out that those also are likely going to be listening to us and sending the footage to the cloud. All right, so that was number one. Let's go to number two. Slightly more sinister than an Alexa device listening to you and sending all of your data to Jeff Bezos to listen to at his leisure is the idea of the DNA test. Now, there's a number of these companies that over the years have promised this home DNA testing service. The one company that has been in the news recently, especially in the last few weeks, is 23andMe, because this company, 23andMe, has announced that it's going bankrupt. Now, if you haven't used 23andMe, good. But if you're not familiar with it, the idea is that they send you a little swab in the postal mail. You swab your cheek enough to get enough DNA, and then you package it up in a little envelope and send it back to the company, and they analyze the DNA. And they send you a little thing that says, wow, you're 18.5% Irish. Neat. That's really cool. How accurate that is was in dispute at the peak of this. I ran a show at one point when I talked about two identical twins doing the cheek swab. I don't know if it was from 23andMe, but one of those companies. And the identical twins, which is to say identical DNA, got back packets in the mail that had completely different percentages from different countries. And when asked, the company, whichever one it was, said, well, you know, it's really not really a scientific readout. It's really more for entertainment. And so they finally pulled the mask off and showed what it really was. It's really not about scientific look at your DNA. They claim that eventually they were going to tell you if you had markers for certain diseases, and so it was in your best interest to get screened. But I was saying, if I may, friends, I was telling you the whole time, do not swab your cheek. Don't give your DNA voluntarily. If there is some hospital, or if there is some medical study, or if there is some legitimate use for swabbing your cheek, and you know that you can trust this medical body, this medical research body, whoever it is, that's different. There's nothing wrong with getting a DNA test. It's that you don't want to send your DNA to surveillance capitalists in Silicon Valley. Right, it's dead on arrival. Immediately, I could tell this is a terrible idea. And some of you out there may be saying, well, Mark, I never did that. And good for you. But there is an additional risk. I'm sorry to tell you that the way DNA is structured, if any relative of yours swabbed their cheek, a close enough relative, I don't have the details to know, is it a first cousin, second cousin? Anyway, if it's a not too distant relative who swabbed their own cheek and sent that back to Silicon Valley, unfortunately, your DNA got caught up in that cloud as well. Yeah, I'm sorry. And that's how they caught the Zodiac killer, because they had a cheek swab of someone who was related to the killer, and they were able to find him. So that was a good outcome of DNA surveillance, but you don't want to normalize that for the entire population. You want to try to target the bad guys and not habituate 300 million Americans or whatever to send in their cheek swabs. Of course, Silicon Valley companies would love that, because they are operating under growth at any cost as their only ethos, irrespective of any harmful or unethical or horror-laden news that come off of that, which is what I'm about to tell you. Because our friend Jason Kebler at 404 Media, he's been on the show once or twice, he wrote a piece about the 23andMe bankruptcy. This is in 404 Media on March 24, 2025. And the headline is, DNA of 15 million people for sale in 23andMe bankruptcy. And so what's happening, maybe you've heard this already, but all the people who swabbed their cheek and sent it to 23andMe, that DNA is now an asset of a bankrupt company. And you know what happens to bankrupt companies? They get put up for sale. The assets are, you know, up for whoever bids the most, I guess, depending on how they do the sale. I'm not an expert in bankruptcy law, but the DNA is going to be for sale because that's their main asset. And you can believe that there are people, there are companies, there are governments, there are organized crime groups, there are who knows who out there who are interested in acquiring that asset, which is the DNA of you, if you or a relative swabbed your cheek, and so many of the people you know. As Jason Kebler writes in the 404 Media piece, there is no way to know what a buyer will want to do with the reams of genetic information it has collected. Customers, meanwhile, still have no way to change their underlying genetic data. A little bit of a dry, humorous comment from Jason Kebler, because this is the thing. When we, in the halcyon years, early on in Silicon Valley's predations against all of us, we would hear about giant leaks. I remember years ago, there was this giant leak of customer data from Target. And it was credit cards and purchase history, and I forget what all was in the leak. But the response from the company was, oops, sorry about that. If your credit card was stolen, just go out and get a new credit card. That's why we have this system that's flexible. You can go get a new credit card. And you know, to some extent, I can kind of, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt, and I'll say for those companies that have leaked credit card data, you know, it's a real pain, and they probably made giant mistakes in their IT policy. I don't know who's at fault, but it's not the customer's fault. But yeah, you're right. The worst thing that happens is for a credit card leak that customers need to go out and get new credit cards. What happens, may I ask, when your genetic data leaks? Is the company going to go out and say, oops, sorry about that. Listen, why don't you go get yourself a new DNA genome and everything will be fine. Just like with the facial recognition companies. When the facial rec database gets leaked, what are they going to tell? Just go out and get a new face. You know, we're at the point, friends, where the surveillance has gotten so intrusive that there are no replacements for the things that we have lost, or in this case, the things that are now up for sale in a bankruptcy. The EFF from March 26 has a piece called How to Delete Your 23andMe Data. And I mean, if you can trust the company when you go onto your little profile and say, click, 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 please delete this, please don't share that, please delete my account. I mean, it's up to you if you trust that the company is actually going to act on that. But I guess it can't hurt. So that link is on the playlist. Again, all these links are on the playlist at tectonic.fm, T-E-C-H, tonic.fm. The EFF piece finishes by saying this. Our DNA contains our entire genetic makeup. It can reveal where our ancestors came from, who we are related to, our physical characteristics, and whether we are likely to get genetically determined diseases. Even if you don't add your own DNA to a private database, a relative could make that choice for you by adding their own, which is what I went over. But here's the key bit about that. DNA can, if it's analyzed correctly, show if you're likely to get certain genetically related diseases. And do you know who might be interested in that? Is health insurers. So you see the risk that we're at when data that we don't want to share gets shared with companies that we never intended to share it with in the first place. And that's where we're headed in this increasingly surveillance-infiltrated society and economy. You have to act outside of the default, okay? My overarching suggestion, urging you here, is I'm going to put myself in the bucket too. We all have to act outside of the default that society and Silicon Valley are habituating us to. So if everyone around you is stuck on a surveillance phone, get off the phone. If all of your neighbors have big tech surveillance devices in their kitchens and their bedrooms on their front door as a doorbell, rip them out of your house and throw them away. If everybody around you is swabbing their cheek and saying, it's fun, find out if you're 18% Irish, let's all do it. You got to say no. We have to operate outside of the defaults. Do you see where I'm getting here? Because eventually we look back and we say, gosh, I wish I hadn't swabbed my cheek. Maybe the privacy people were onto something when they told us over 5 years ago, again and again, not to swab my cheek. So here's the opportunity you have to rip the surveillance out of your life as much as you can and start living outside of the default that's being normalized all around us in the surveillance society. Speaking of facial rec, by the way, I did a show a year or so ago with Kashmira Hill, New York Times journalist who wrote a great book called Your Face Belongs to Us, which was a profile of a company called Clearview AI, which had built up a surveillance database of billions, not millions, billions of photos that it had scraped from social media sites and other parts of the web, and basically gave Clearview the ability to identify you from any photo or in real time from an app that they had developed. Just blowing privacy out of the water. Anywhere you walk, anywhere in public, you can be immediately identified by Clearview. Now, they say, don't worry, we only share our stuff with law enforcement. And so however you feel about law enforcement, go back and listen to my interview with Ben Snyder, author of Spy Plane, to hear more about that. Anyway, 404 Media, again, this is from March 19 by Freddie Martinez, wrote a piece, a little bit of update on the surveillance company called Clearview. Facial recognition company Clearview attempted to buy social security numbers and mugshots for its database. Quote, Clearview AI spent nearly $1 million in a bid to purchase 690 million arrest records and 390 million arrest photos from all 50 states, court records reveal. And based on the headline, we know they are also attempting to buy social security numbers. So this is just one, just that look at Clearview is to remind you that these companies that build up a surveillance business, they don't sit still. They are looking to grow at any cost, and that means they want to grow the reach of their surveillance empire, and that means getting more and more data on more and more people. And as that gets consolidated in these companies, that is yet another treasure trove if the company goes bankrupt, if it gets bought by Mark Zuckerberg or Jeff Bezos, or if it gets hacked, or if it's leaked, somehow all of that data is this incredibly sensitive asset that almost certainly at some point is going to leak out. And what happens at that point? I just want to remind you that this surveillance society is growing. It's growing in its breadth, the number of types, the varieties of data sources that it's bringing about, and the depth, the level of intrusion that these companies are getting to. I've got your photos, now I want your social security number. Why in the world would you need that? Well, because I'm growing as much surveillance power as I can, just like every other guy out there. So just trying to eat. So Clearview is in the same business as Facebook, as Google, as Amazon, and increasingly as Apple. And I'll throw Microsoft in there as well. But, excuse me, this is not the ultimate point of this show. And I want to remind you, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst. We are about halfway through my show called Emergency Surveillance Update. And I'm giving some grim but important news as to the current growth of the surveillance state, both the Silicon Valley companies that are predating on all of us and our privacy, and now in the second half of the show, I want to get to their government partners. Now, some time ago, I had on the show Byron Tao, who wrote a book talking about the increasingly close partnership between the tech industry and the government, specifically the U.S. government. And that was written in the waning days of the Biden administration. But I remember telling people along the way, you know, you might have a certain degree of trust of the current administration. This is now a couple of years ago. But you never know who's going to take the reins of power in the future. In other words, if you allow the U.S. government to set up an intrusive Orwellian surveillance state all around us, if you allow that because you say, well, I pretty much kind of sort of trust that our leaders are going to do the right thing, you are making a mistake because you have to think about who might take power next and how that surveillance state, how the features and the affordances of that surveillance state might be weaponized against you in the future. And here we are. Here we are under this current occupant, and the current occupant's best bud, Elon Musk, is running this thing called Doge, which I feel embarrassed even to have to say that there is this made-up fake government agency that is named after a crypto coin that itself was kind of made up as a joke. I mean, the whole thing is so offensive that there are people's lives that are being affected, being harmed by an agency that is a joke about a joke. Okay, the basic decency of a government to treat its citizens with respect. We're not even getting that here with Doge. Anyway, so this is a story from the New York Times from February 19. written by Andrew Durin and Cecilia Kong. And the headline is, Struggle Over Americans' Personal Data Plays Out Across the Government. Now, you remember, just a minute ago, I told you that Clearview AI was looking to buy Social Security numbers. You know who else wants to acquire Social Security numbers is the U.S. government that already has it but wants to consolidate it. So Elon Musk, here's a quote, employees from Elon Musk's so-called Department of Government Efficiency are gaining access to vast amounts of information held by federal agencies, even as lawsuits try to stop them. And in the weeks since that story broke, I don't think any of the lawsuits have stopped them. Just, you know, spoiler alert. And so Kashmira Hill, bringing her up again, had a post on social media on that story. She said, in the world of privacy coverage, there has always been a central question of who is a greater threat to it, the government or corporate America. Now with DOGE, the two are merged into one. Because you have Elon Musk, who runs DOGE, a, you know, fake, but it's whatever it is run inside the U.S. government, and he is a representative of Silicon Valley, being the richest man in the world. So we have this problem where the government is now making use of its surveillance data in ways that we didn't maybe foresee, or certainly we didn't want it to happen. And yet it's happening, and even lawsuits can't stop it. And that brings us to my final topic for the last 15 or 20 minutes is the following. And I thought Gary Marcus put this the best. He writes on March 10, urgent warning, Black Mirror has entered the United States with AI as its handmaiden. And he's not, Gary Marcus is an AI researcher who I respect a lot. I like his position on AI. And he's been writing a lot about what the U.S. government is doing with surveillance and AI in order to threaten citizens and residents of the country. Gary writes, Axios broke a story this morning that made my blood curdle. The State Department intends to revoke the visas of large numbers of foreigners, in this case, largely student protesters, in part based on AI analysis of their social media posts. He writes, I fear a world in which the State Department can judge anyone at any time to be a quote-unquote threat to the state, even based on superficial AI analysis, and deport them without due process, using AI as a smokescreen to authoritarian action, unquote. And that, in fact, is exactly what has happened since. So this is the issue. There is a Tufts PhD student originally from Turkey. Her name is Rumeysa Öztürk. And if you've seen the videos online, they were passed around quite a bit. She left her, I think it was a townhouse somewhere in the Boston area, not far from Tufts, in daylight. And a group of masked men, and I think there was one woman, swarmed her. She screamed. They said, we're the police, but they didn't, as far as I know, show any identification. They didn't prove that they were from any law enforcement or government agency. And they put handcuffs on her and put her in a car and drove off. And next thing we hear, Öztürk is in a holding facility in Louisiana, I believe. So they took her across state lines. There was no charge. There was no identification of them as the police. I mean, it was a classic just disappearance. And it was in broad daylight in the U.S. of A. So Mike Masnick, who writes Tech Dirt, a lot of us who write about tech and are concerned about where Silicon Valley is taking us and now the U.S. government are now writing about tech, but also writing about U.S. politics because we see the embroiled partnership of the tech industry and the U.S. government, again, using surveillance and AI to carry out authoritarian action. And so we have to speak out. That's why I'm speaking out tonight. So this is what Mike Masnick wrote. This is a piece from March 27 called Trump's Secret Police Are Now Disappearing Students for Their Op-Eds. Here's what Mike writes. The federal government isn't just pressuring universities over speech. It's literally disappearing students for their political expression. If you support actual free speech, now is the time to speak up. The latest example of this authoritarian overreach is particularly chilling. Rumeyza Öztürk, a Turkish PhD student at Tufts, who was here legally on a student visa, was abducted by masked agents in broad daylight. She was disappeared without due process or explanation. Only later did we learn she had been renditioned to a detention center in Louisiana. Her supposed crime? A year ago, she co-authored an op-ed in the Tufts Daily, that's the Tufts newspaper for Tufts University, criticizing her university administration's stance on the Israel-Palestine conflict, not advocating violence, not supporting terrorism, not even criticizing the U.S. government, just exercising core First Amendment rights by publishing criticism of her own university's policies in a student newspaper. Unquote. And friends, you can look it up. The op-ed she wrote, she was a co-author. There were, I don't know, two or three or four other co-authors. And as Mike points out, this op-ed ran a year ago. So this was something that just lay dormant. And it was a little op-ed in a newspaper. And if you read the op-ed, it's just totally straightforward. It's this group of students saying, we would ask the Tufts administration to reconsider its decision on the X, Y, and Z. Please reconsider. That's about the thrust of it. Now, you might look at this and you say, well, I bet the students look at the Israel-Palestine conflict different from how I do. Or maybe you agree with them. It doesn't, my point is, it does not matter. It absolutely does not matter what they said. I mean, as Mike said, they were not advocating violence or terrorism or anything. They were exercising free speech to write their opinion about a university decision about something happening in the world. That's all. And you know what? Far from being disappeared and renditioned to Louisiana, we should be celebrating that we have students who would take the time to issue a well thought out, or maybe even not well thought out, but some kind of opinion in a newspaper, because that is what we do in a free country, is we have free speech and people are allowed to disagree. We're allowed to disagree. And you could even read that and say, well, I disagree with their position on that conflict. Okay, we're allowed to disagree. That's what we do in a democracy. We're allowed to disagree. We're allowed to have free speech. We're absolutely, absolutely not to disappear people. That is an outrage. I'm personally offended that my government is beginning to disappear people for criticizing a university decision. No, but let's hear from our own Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, because a few days ago, Marco Rubio, at a press conference, was asked a very straightforward question about this exact incident. Why, and you'll hear the journalist ask, why did you disappear Rumeyza Öztürk? Why? What did she do? Why? And I want you to listen to this. This is a two-minute clip, and I want you to listen, friends. I want you to try to listen if Marco Rubio ever comes within 10 miles of answering the question. Here it is.
Sorry, a Turkish student in Boston was detained and handcuffed on the street by plainclothes agents. A year ago, she wrote an opinion piece about the Gaza war. Could you help us understand what the specific action she took led to her visa being revoked?
Yeah,
and what was your State Department's role in that process?
We revoked her visa. It's an F-1 visa, I believe. We revoked it, and here's why. And I'll say it again. I said it everywhere. Let me be abundantly clear, okay? If you go apply for a visa right now anywhere in the world, let me just send this message out. If you apply for a visa to enter the United States and be a student, and you tell us that the reason why you're coming to the United States is not just because you want to write op-eds, but because you want to participate in movements that are involved in doing things like vandalizing universities, harassing students, taking over buildings, creating a ruckus, we're not going to give you a visa. If you lie to us and get a visa and then enter the United States and with that visa participate in that sort of activity, we're going to take away your visa. And once you've lost your visa, you're no longer legally in the United States, and we have a right, like every country in the world has a right, to remove you from our country. So it's just that simple. I think it's crazy. I think it's stupid for any country in the world to welcome people into their country that are going to go to your universities as visitors. They're visitors. And say, I'm going to your universities to start a riot. I'm going to your universities to take over a library and harass people. I don't care what movement you're involved in. Why would any country in the world allow people to come and disrupt? Now, we gave you a visa to come and study and get a degree, not to become a social activist that tears up our university campuses. And if we've given you a visa and then you decide to do that, we're going to take it away. I encourage every country to do that, by the way, because I think it's crazy to invite students into your country that are coming onto your campus and destabilizing it. We're just not going to have it. So we'll revoke your visa, and once your visa is revoked, you're illegally in the country and you have to leave. Every country in the world has a right to decide who comes in as a visitor and who doesn't. If you invite me into your home because you say, I want to come to your house for dinner, and I go to your house and I start putting mud on your couch and spray painting your kitchen, I bet you're going to kick me out. Well, we're going to do the same thing if you come into the United States as a visitor and create a ruckus for us. We don't want it. We don't want it in our country. Go back and do it in your country. But you're not going to do it in our country.
Okay, so that was Secretary of State Marco Rubio not answering the question, why did the State Department disappear Rameza Ozturk off to Louisiana with no charges, no evidence, no identification, nothing, just in broad daylight? This is essentially a kidnapping. And it's interesting, if you listen to Rubio, there's one word, I don't know if you picked up on this, there's one word that he kept saying again and again and again and again throughout that long, meaningless diatribe. The word was, if. Did you notice that? He said, if you come into this country and you do this, if you do that, and if you come into my house and throw mud on my couch, I don't know where he's going with that, but if you do this, if you do that, it was all these hypotheticals. If one was to, you know, support terrorists, then we would revoke their visa. And that's the kind of thing where you can listen to Rubio and you can say, well, yeah, I suppose if a student came and was on a student visa and started advocating for terrorist acts or something, yeah, I could see a visa, you know, having serious conversation about that visa. But Mr. Rubio, that's not the question that was asked. The question that you continually try to avoid answering is, why did you kidnap Rameza Ozturk? No answer. Because there is no answer. Except I think that there is an indication, and I'm, again, bringing up that issue that I started the show with, this question of basic competence in our leaders right now. I'm not sure if Rubio was even aware of this or if he could have put this into his answer. But going back to Gary Marcus's post that where he wrote, Black Mirror has entered the U.S. with AI as its handmaiden. And he quoted this Axios piece that said the State Department intends to revoke the visas in part based on AI analysis of social media posts. And so that's not the only headline. There's another one that I put on the playlist by Ken Klippenstein from March 28, talking about the current administration spying on social media of student visa holders. And you can read that on the playlist. Here's my thought, is that whether this was the case with Rameza Ozturk or not, what's going to be happening is that the government, working closely with big tech, is going to start to deploy AI as a surveillance tool to automatically flag people it deems risky, is probably the best word I can use. And when I say risky for this administration, risky could mean someone who criticizes the current administration. And if someone asks, why did that person get kidnapped? They'll give another non-answer because they may not even know. It might be an AI algorithm that eventually makes the decision who gets disappeared. And the data that's being surveilled is everything on the public web, everything that is available through the surveillance capitalists that I talked about earlier. It could be social media posts. It could be things that you say within range of an Alexa. It could be things that you say within range of a surveillance doorbell, like an Amazon Ring. It could be things that you write in Gmail, because Google has access to everything in your email, and it has shown that it has interest in making money off of its surveillance of your data. It could be anything that you type or say or post anywhere within range of a keyboard, a surveillance phone, a surveillance doorbell, or any other sensor in our ever-growing surveillance state. The part, but I'm trying to get to you, friends, this is why I wanted to start with the corporate surveillance in the first half of the show, to paint a picture that the companies are still metastasizing. Their surveillance sensors, their surveillance devices, surveillance platforms are continuing to multiply and proliferate into every area of our lives. And what's happened in the last couple of years, especially supercharged, starting with the inauguration, when we saw the CEOs of big tech standing by that presidential podium, is we're seeing, and I did a whole show on this, you can find it in the archives, we're seeing a closer than ever partnership between big tech and its surveillance capabilities with the government that now has an extra reason to want to deploy surveillance and AI in order to find people to flag so that it can disappear them in an extrajudicial manner against the wishes of lawyers and perhaps even judges saying, you can't do this, the law doesn't allow this, and they do it anyway. I mean, frankly, friends, if they start with the grad students on student visas, I can't imagine that it's going to end there. Where do we head from here in this country? Where you have a government that has both harmful intent and a problem of basic competence, partnering with the most unethical companies in human history that have the most intrusive surveillance capabilities of any platforms ever devised by human beings. And we, the citizens, are in their sights. And this government now has the ability, as it goes authoritarian on us, to deploy the surveillance of big tech and the AI of big tech against all of us. And who is going to stand up for us when the next one of us has disappeared? Who's going to stand up for us? And what is the post that it's going to trip the AI algorithm that sends the goons against us? Is it a post that's a year old? Is it an op-ed in a student newspaper? God forbid, is it an independent tech news program? I mean, I have to admit, the question is crossed my mind too. I don't want to over-dramatize this, but all of us should think about where we are in this line of people who are vulnerable. It's not going to start with independent radio hosts, I don't think, but it's because it's starting with more vulnerable people, politically vulnerable here on student visas. But where does it go from here? Where does it go from here, friends? And I don't have the right answer. I don't have a silver bullet solution. I just wanted to raise the emergency for you this evening, because we're headed into some very, very dark times when we see the political machine partnering with the big tech machine and ending up with kidnapping. That's the beginning of something very, very dark. So friends, please take care of each other. Reach out to somebody, meet them offline, turn off the surveillance devices, and have a real human conversation. And be good to one another. And I'm going to try my best to be back next week. You are listening to the greatest radio station in the world, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County, and 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. Until next time, friends, I have some homework for you. Very straightforward, but very important, even more important than ever. Avoid Apple. Abandon Amazon. Forget Facebook. And whatever you do, friends, get off Google. And I really thought I should end on a high note, something positive, because this has been just such unremitting grimness and depression for the last hour. So I came across this rather catchy gospel song. This goes out to brother Kevin Nutt, his friend, his show Sinner's Crossroads is one of the best here at WFMU. And this is the Georgia Mass Choir singing us a reassuring song called By and By. Have a good week, everybody. I'll see you next time.
And on those many notes, welcome to another installment of It's Complicated, an hour of prog and prog-adjacent music. I'm your host, Dave Mandel. I'm here every Monday following Mark Hurst and the Tectonic Show here at WFMU. Thank you so much for joining me. Pleasure to be here always playing music for you for the next 60 minutes. We're going to start tonight's show with music from a group called Blotted Science. They are from San Antonio, Texas. San Antone. Do they still call it San Antone? This is a track from an album called The Animation of Entomology. There's an editor's term called polysyllabic humor, and that's what this is. It's many, many syllables. We're going to hear a track called Vermicular Asphyxiation from an album called The Animation of Entomology. How many more syllables could I fit in to one track description? Anyway, a good piece. I'm going to give the usual warning to headphone wearers. This is going to be a little loud, kind of an evil track, kind of metally. And again, it's a group called Blotted Science. Enjoy. Oh, come on now. We're not ready for that just yet. Anyway, track there from the group Blotted Science, Vermicular Asphyxiation. Do I have to say all these syllables again? Vermicular Asphyxiation from an album called The Animation of Entomology. My goodness. They're from San Antonio. And as someone mentioned on the chat board, although I hinted at it last week, I'm not being coy here, it is, in fact, my birthday today, which means we get to hear some more Jethro Tull. It's been a few weeks, at least a few weeks.